And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities mining in the junior resource sector. And with the Surf Lords kicking off another edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, we have on the line from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, hockey season is now over for me. My New York Rangers knocked out of the playoffs. Your St. Louis Blues have a lifeline, but boy, oh boy, it's tough against Chicago, isn't it?
They're like the Walking Dead, a bunch of zombies that are hard to kill. But that said, we're going to home to St. Louis for Game 7, and it ain't over till it's over.
All righty, I'll be cheering for your Blues. Listen, we are on to part two of an in-depth look at iron. Last time out, you know, we tried to put all this into one program. Mickey, there's just too much on the table to jam into one show, so we're going to continue the conversation this time out. Where do you want to begin?
Well, we're talking about iron ore this time, and iron ore, iron oxides, 98% of all production is from steel, and as we alluded to last time, this is the world's largest market for metal. 95% of the total metal produced per year is iron. In the prehistoric sources of iron ore were from laterites, which are basically remnant residual soils where iron would be concentrated. Pre-industrial revolution, there was something called bog ore, and this was very important in places like Northern England or Ireland, and that's basically an iron oxide that's concentrated in bogs. Mm-hmm. By the late 1800s, early 1900s, there were discoveries of direct shipping iron oxide ores, and those were very rich, say in the 60-plus percent iron range. As those have been depleted, or have the world's demand has increased, post-World War II, we started mining very low-grade ores called taconite from 25 to 30 percent iron oxides, and then concentrated into that magical number, about 62 to 64 percent iron.
Okay, there's also a magmatic ore, correct? And that's
really well. We haven't even addressed the geology end of this yet. Mm-hmm. So why don't we do that, Rob?
Okay. Okay.
These direct shipping ores and also the taconite ores are from world abundance of what are called banded iron formations, which concentrate magnetite and hematite, the iron oxides, and they occur in the U.S. and eastern Canada and northern Sweden and Brazil and Australia. Essentially occur on all continents except Antarctica, and they're probably under the ice sheets of Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
And they can either, once again, be direct shipping or taconite ores. Other kinds of deposits include magnetite skarns, and a skarn is an alteration of limestone next in intrusive. In Chile, they occur in primary volcanic flows, skarns in Indonesia, and then I think what you were alluding to would be the magmatic intrusions, and those are complex ores of iron, titanium, and vanadium. So a couple of metals that are used extensively for alloys in those, and those are especially prevalent in the Labrador Trough of eastern Canada.
Yeah, and we've done, I believe, a couple of programs on those metals in when we were looking at the specialty metals before, Mickey. Overall production, I'm seeing, what, about 3,200 million metric tons produced a year. Is that sound about right?
Yeah, 3.2 billion tons. And, mm-hmm. and the real key here are the banded iron formations. You know, the direct shipping ores are still comprise about 60% of the world market. And those, the geology of those is quite interesting. They occur in a specific time period in geologic history, from about 1.8 to 3.2 billion years when there was no oxygen in the atmosphere. So there was fixing of iron oxides on the seafloor, and that's where they come from. Since we have had an oxygenated atmosphere in Middle Precambrian time, those formations are not, no longer being deposited.
Okay, who are the big producers, Mickey? Which countries?
Well, the big producers include Australia kind of dominates, China, of course, the U.S., Canada, Sweden. The list kind of goes on and on. India, Russia, Ukraine, South Africa, Iran, Canada, I think I already mentioned, mm-hmm. Kazakhstan. So these are abundant formations all over the world.
Okay, and I believe, well, you said Australia right up there at the top. That's really reflected, too, in the big dominant players that we have in this industry, Anglo-Australian companies such as Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton.
Rio Tinto, BHP Billiton, Vale, which is a Brazilian-based company, mm-hmm. but now owns much of the iron ore production in Canada. Fortescue is another major player.
Okay, when we look at consumption versus production, how are we sitting right now in terms of supply-demand?
Well, demand continues to grow, but what's really happened over the last 3 or 4 years, based on some what were unrealistic projections of consumption from China and also the growing portions of Eastern Asia, supplies have been gone out the roof, basically, and there's been lots of production plan that has now become uneconomic.
A lot of this stuff, as you mentioned, Mickey, the vast majority of it used for steel. So if we're going to talk about the future of pricing and demand, we got to look at the future of global steel demand. I've been reading forecasts that this is kind of flat. You know, we're not expecting a lot of upward movement in steel demand.
World demand continues to grow. It's just the fact that we've got all these supplies that came on during the boom times. And that's been driven a lot by iron ore prices. If you look in 2010, prices were $110 a ton. They climbed to $210 a ton in early 2011. Even by middle 2013, the prices were still at $175 a ton, but that's when they collapsed. That's kind of when China quit growing, and there's just so much production that came on and so much production that was planned. The price collapsed as far down as in December at $55 a ton. It's since recovered a bit. Latest price I saw was $72 a ton, but you know what really is going on here, Rob, is there's a cartel, and we've already mentioned these big companies, and there's a cartel that have been basically controlling most of the price for the last 40 years. Mm-hmm. And they would get together, a cartel of miners and also steel companies, and they would set annual benchmark prices. Those have now broken down somewhat. They're now gone to quarterly prices. There is now a steel index, which functions for exchange-traded swaps and a futures and options market. But iron ore is really a bulk dry commodity. It's traded, as we've already alluded to, in dollars per tons, and it's essentially an industrial mineral.
Mm-hmm. So the demands, I guess, for more transparent pricing in this have not really been met totally.
Well, it has not totally. Your point's well taken there, Rob. It's much less opaque than it used to be, but it's still not exactly transparent. There have been trade wars, if you will, between China and this major cartel in setting prices. You know, this is a very high volume, low margin business. Mm-hmm. Where the economics is really dependent on infrastructure, also dependent on energy costs, because steel smelting is not a cheap thing to do, very capital expensive, and I should say capital intensive. So, you know, it's really controlled by the major mining companies in the world.
And another point I know that you wanted to discuss, Mickey, was the importance of scrap. I guess stockpiling of scrap metal or the recycling of stuff is really had an impact on the overall market as well. And I think
The scrap market is a very important part of this equation, both for iron and steel. It's a major industry. It's a major market. For instance, you know, a lot of the information or some of the information we always look at is from the USGS. Mm-hmm. And iron is such an important part of this. They have four commodity summaries on it. They have iron ore, they have a section on iron and steel, they have a iron and steel scrap summary, mm-hmm. and they have an iron and steel slag summary. So, you know, to let you know, 60% of the iron ore is, and the raw steel production every year in the U.S. is from scrap. And we haven't really mentioned yet the slag industry, and this is a very important too. The slag from steel smelting is a very important part of the construction industry in the world. And you know, with much of the say North American steel industry idled now, you can attest to the number of mines that have shut down in eastern Canada. This has led to a shortage of smelter slag for the construction industry. So it's a really convoluted market.
Yeah, and explaining the in terms of the scrap and the recycling of the metal, that's an easy one to explain, isn't it? The more recycling there is, the less demand there is for to get ore out of the ground to make it.
Well, that's true. And the other thing going on with the scrap industry, it's much cheaper than smelting primary iron ore. I don't know if you see it in your part of the world, but you know, there's always trucks moving down the highway in just about every country I work in, certainly in China and Chile and even in the U.S., hauling a bunch of metal going to the scrap refiner.
I can put a piece of metal, for example, an old barbecue out of my curb, Mickey, come to garbage day. That thing doesn't last for more than half an hour. Somebody's driving by in a truck and they pick up this scrap stuff. Yeah, there's certainly a demand for it.
Yeah, I've taken it to the, I misspoke there, not to the refiner, but to the recycler. Yep. That's a major business.
It is indeed. Let's talk about reserves out there, Mickey. How much iron, how much ore is there estimated to be in the world right now, iron ore? And any thoughts at all that this is a resource that could eventually become depleted?
Well, I think my usual answer to that is absolutely not. Right now, there are world reserves for 70 years. The Malthusians, there's been a bunch of alarmist papers and books, et cetera, running the idea that we're going to run out of iron ore in 30 or 60 years. Mm-hmm. But that really ignores the immense amount of banded iron formations in the world. We've already seen that, for instance, post-World War II, we've replaced the direct shipping orders, or as a demand increase, we start mining taconite at less than half the grade. So by mining lower grade, new technologies, new recovery technologies, and also they ignore the idea that there are going to be new reserves developed. So exploration is not part of the Malthusian idea. I'm a cornucopian. Don't think we're going to run out of iron ore anytime soon.
Okay.
In fact, I would say as long as we want to continue in our iron age, we're going to have plenty of iron available.
Okay, you had mentioned earlier in wrapping up, Mickey, that this is a very low-margin business. It's, you know, even for the big players out there right now, they've been going through a tough stretch. Tell us about how the junior sector of the market has been faring.
Well, the juniors during these periods of high prices, specifically in the early 2000s and 10s, a lot of them came into the space, especially a sweet spot was the aforementioned Labrador Trough. You know, there were big iron ore plays up as far remote as Baffin Island in far northeastern Canada. They've all failed. And, you know, once again, it's the idea of juniors that they can go into major commodities production, exploration, development, production, and compete, and time again. That doesn't pan out. You know, look at a mid-tier steel company, Cliffs Natural Resources, which has been on the bank of bankruptcy for a while here. You know, the idea with the juniors was very dependent on Chinese capital, and that's really dried up because their steel industry is in a world of hurt.
Okay, well, we have the Surf Lords playing again, Mickey, so it's time to wrap this one up. Any ideas for the next time out?
Absolutely. We're going to go from a commodity that constitutes 95% of the metal mined on the planet, and we're going to finish up here with the metal that has the least demand on the world stage, and that is scandium.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going to leave people in suspense for a couple of weeks, but scandium it is. Okay. Great stuff. Mickey, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulte, the mercenary geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.